If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I am joined by the wonderful Amelie Lee. I love this episode so much because reactive hunger is something that I'm experiencing right now myself, but it's just not talked about that much. It was amazing to explore this with Amelie based on their personal experience, their experience with other clients, and also their experience and research that they did with their masters to really understand the science behind reactive hunger as well. We also speak about quasi-recovery and keeping pushing on through recovery even when it gets hard. I really, really hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello, everybody listening. We've got a very special episode today. Amelie and I have been chatting on Instagram, and we thought that both of our audiences would appreciate the conversation that we'll be having today. So this episode, not only can you listen to it on Amelie's podcast, but you can also listen to it on my podcast. Hello, Amelie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here.
Well, thank you for having me as well. It's very exciting.
Of course.
I'm going to let you lead, if that's okay, on what we're going to discuss today, just because I have personal experience of it. And it's actually, like, the timing of this is amazing because I think I'm going through this period of recovery now and pulling my hair out. So I'm so excited to chat to you about all the research that you've done and the experience you've had, because I think I'm going to get so much from this episode, let alone the listeners.
Yeah, that is amazing. It's so good to talk with someone, you know, who is actually kind of going through it, right? Because a lot of times it's like just talking about people who've researched it. And yeah, I've gone through it myself, so I get that. But someone who's actually like a bit in the heat of it is really good. So I also, just before I start, because I also want to just check in with you, like, to which extent you're comfortable with sharing your own experience, just so I don't like jump in, especially like a bit of a sensitive topic. Are you okay me asking you a bit like how things feel and these things? Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I am such an open book. Like, you can ask me or anything, and I'm happy to share my experience, because the way that I see it is the more I share and the more that we normalize these conversations around things, hopefully the more other people will listen and be like, oh, I don't have to be ashamed, or there's no stigma attached to this, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm very open about my experience.
Yeah, that's great. I'm the exact same. I'm quite open about my own experience. It's weird because I'm not like a super open person about everything in my life, but with an eating disorder, it's like, yeah, I'm go ahead, right? It's just
yeah. What do you want to know?
Exactly, just dishing out trauma here. So I'm so excited about this conversation, because it's something that I would say the vast majority of people with eating disorders experience extreme hunger at one point or to some extent, yet you never hear people talk about it. Yes, there is increasingly some awareness over social media, but I feel like that awareness hasn't necessarily spread, especially to the treatment room. So a lot of people who work in eating disorders, they aren't always quite aware, and it just creates a lot of taboo. I don't know if you've experienced this taboo yourself.
Yeah, I think I don't necessarily know about taboo in terms of like within society or, you know, the recovery community or something, but I think the inner turmoil of when you think about, you know, extreme hunger. And I actually think I have an issue with the word extreme hunger anyway. I think in a sense that the terminology is quite stigmatizing in a way, because it's, you know, it is at the end of the day just hunger. And especially when you've been in an eating disorder like anorexia, and your body has been starved for so long, it is, you know, it's only natural that once you start eating again and your body gets used to getting food, you know, consistently, rather than, oh, we've had a day of eating and then it thinking, maybe we're not going to get that again, so let's store all of this. Your body's finally getting to a point where it's able to use that effectively and things like that. And so it's not really extreme hunger. It's your body being like, holy shit, we're finally getting this. Please give us more of this. But the term extreme hunger, I really struggle with, because it makes me feel guilty for having that because of the word extreme.
Yeah, I'm just nodding along here. It's so, so true. There's really nothing extreme about extreme hunger when you think about it. Mm-hmm. I actually sometimes tend to call it reactive hunger instead, just to take away that extreme component, and also just to separate extreme hunger from other forms of, like, eating disorder related, what we call hyperphagia, from other forms of hyperphagia, which is the scientific name of elevated appetite. Because reactive hunger, essentially, it's a reaction to something. It's a reaction to that undernourishment. And when you think about the almost the calorific debt that has been built up, the amount of debt that person has been in, obviously you're then going to have an elevated hunger response. That's just completely logical. And I often find, so I've done quite a bit of research on reactive hunger, so I have lived experience with myself, and I'm very fascinated about the topics. I actually ended up doing my master thesis on it as well, so I've done a lot of research on it. And very often when I explain a bit my work and my research, when I explain it to people without eating disorders, just a lay person, and I explain the concept that, yeah, when someone has restricted severely, been under their set point, when someone is in deficit, they tend to get really hungry. And the reaction is always, yeah, obviously. It's like, it's the most obvious thing in the world. Yet sometimes when you're going through it, what I often hear from people is they're like, I'm so confused. Why do I feel so hungry? And it's like, there is a bit of a sense of almost denial that, yeah, it does apply to me as well. This is what I'm experiencing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think also what my experience has been is that if I think about, you know, my experience of having anorexia, obviously, as you said there, like, you're in a calorific deficit. So you think, you know, if you were thinking about it logically, you would think that the amount of food somebody is eating, they would be hungry. However, my experience of having anorexia is that I didn't experience hunger. And I don't know whether there's maybe a psychological, a physiological response there to the eating disorder, of that your hunger cues are suppressed. But to not have that for so long, and then, you know, you start engaging in recovery, that's really difficult. You're increasing the amount of calories that you're eating, you're increasing the variety of foods that you're eating. There's a lot of guilt attached with that, naturally, because the eating disorder is trying to pull you back and say, you know, you're awful, you're disgusting because you're eating so much. But then you've gone from not having these hunger cues to, okay, now I've started eating. And then it's almost like, okay, now you've started eating a bit more, the hunger switch has been switched on. Yeah. And so you've then got that additional guilt and anxiety and panic of, I am now actually eating more, but I'm even more hungry. And I think that for me lately has been the thing that I've struggled to comprehend so much, because it's like, I've literally almost doubled my calorie intake from when I was, you know, really ill, but my body is still hungry. And it's like, but why can't you just be satisfied with what I give you? Because I don't want to push it even more. That feels absolutely terrifying. But my body is saying, clearly we do need more.
Mm-hmm. This is such a common experience. I tend to call it eating-induced hunger. And this can feel really confusing when you're experiencing it, because logically you would think, okay, the less I eat, then I get more hungry, and then I eat more and I get less hungry. It's just, and then you have an experience that goes so totally against that logic. And that can be incredibly, incredibly confusing when you're experiencing it. I had the same experience myself when I went through my own recovery over 10 years ago. And it was that sense of, oh, but I used to be someone who was, quote unquote, able to restrict. And now I felt like, oh, I can't do that anymore. And then the eating disorder will, of course, shame for that and be like, oh my God, you're becoming greedy. No, 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 you're losing control. And then that there it goes, right? What is actually happening is that what we see, so I will also say that we don't fully understand all of this. And that's something that drives me nuts because I like to understand everything, but we don't fully understand what's going on. But what we do see is that people with anorexia, they tend to have a little bit of a different reaction to being in a deficit, where the hunger signals a lot of times actually will go down. The mental hunger will sometimes go up. So you see people with anorexia, they may constantly think about food, they'll be obsessed with cooking, but they feel like they are actually able to, quote unquote, they feel like they can, quote unquote, survive on a low intake. Obviously, they're not doing well on this low intake, like mentally and physically. It's not like, oh yeah, that's fine. It is not fine. But they feel like they're able to restrict and eat an intake that most people wouldn't in any way be able to maintain. And then what we tend to see is that when someone then increases their intake, they get out of this famine response. And then the body starts, oh, whoa, 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 we've been restricted for, we've been starved, and then elevates hunger to far above what someone who is not starved would feel like. And there we have reactive hunger. So actually, feeling more hungry by eating is actually a famine response. It is a temporary famine response. This is what I always tell people, because sometimes people panic when they're experiencing it. And then I think, well, that just is a sign that I need to restrict for the rest of my life. It is not. It is temporary. It will pass. When people go through it, they never think it's going to pass. They're like, no, it will pass for other people. Not for me, though. No, and I need notice this when I work with clients as well. They're like, no, Amali, you don't understand. For me, it's more extreme than for other people. It's like, congratulations, you just suffer from unicorn syndrome. It's completely normal. But it is temporary.
It's so funny because you're exactly saying how my brain is right now.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, I always say that eating disorders, even though I really want to acknowledge everyone has a different experience, everyone is different, I still always say eating disorders are not that creative. Like, the conspiracy thinking that I hear from different people about, I can always almost predict what they're going to say in response, because the eating disorder is just the same anxieties over and over, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think in a way, like, if I, you know, really like thought about that comment, I would be like, that's actually really upset me, because not that you have upset me, I'm actually joking about that, but like, the eating disorder makes you feel like you are so special, like you are so unique, like what you're experiencing is really unique to you, and that you have the drive and the desire and the passion to do that. And actually, you know, when we think about it realistically, I've had this conversation with so many people, and I've always been like, what I don't understand is that, like, this is happening in our heads, and we can't, like, you know, clearly define a neural pathway that's like broken off and that's why this is happening, but everybody seems to have such similar thought patterns about it. And I find it incredible that, like, it is so similar from one person to the next. And then, like you said, people will have different experiences, but, you know, when we talk about how an eating disorder makes us feel and things like that, it can be very similar for a lot of people. So I think it's really interesting how, you know, in the moment you feel like you're the only person experiencing it, and whether that's like, oh my God, I'm the only person experiencing this, is absolutely horrific, or I'm really special and the eating disorder loves me, la la la. And maybe that is a good kind of reframe in recovery to have, in that almost the eating disorder is gaslighting you, or, you know, really manipulating you, in that sense of you're not actually as special to it as it's making it out that you are. And you don't need to kind of stick in it because you feel like that's your only worth, or, you know, that the eating disorder, like, loves you so much. Because ultimately, if you want to think about it that way, it's just going to hop onto the next person when you leave. So it's kind of, you don't need to stay with it in order to feel unique and special.
Yeah, I love what you're saying there. It's so true that eating disorder will really latch onto this idea that the eating disorder is some kind of like secret special talent or something that makes you unique or special. And I think diet culture reinforces this, because there's so much focus on dieting. And I remember this myself, there was so much like there was people will talk about going on diets and restriction and how this was something very, very hard. And then I felt like for me, this is really easy. So therefore I must have a special talent. I can do something other people can't do. And that was very important to kind of humble myself a little bit there and be like, no, you're not very special. You're actually having a biological and psychological faulty response to famine. Mm-hmm. And what I always tell people with restrictive eating disorders is that for you, restriction is the easy choice for you. That is the easy. That's the eating disorder is the easy choice, whilst recovery is the hard choice. That's the brave choice, right? So that kind of takes you need to humble the eating disorder a little bit because it will try and put itself on a pedestal, but that's not where it belongs.
Yeah. It's so funny actually because I was listening to some music the other day and I don't know whether you know the song, but All American Rejects' Dirty Little Secret came on. And the lyrics are like, I'll keep you my dirty little secret. And I was like, oh my God, this is how it feels when you first kind of, you know, almost get into a relationship with an eating disorder. Like you are its dirty little secret and you're just keeping it between the two of you. But I also completely agree with what you were saying there. And I think that's what makes recovery from an eating disorder so difficult is because the behaviors associated with an eating disorder, like if we think about it, nobody wants to get to the deepest, darkest points of anorexia, for example. You know, nobody wants to be like really, really underweight and really struggling with their mental health and the suicidal thoughts that come along with that and the medical complications.
Yeah.
But the behaviors associated with that in order to that occur with anorexia, such as the restriction, you know, depriving yourself, like having the willpower to avoid certain foods and things like that, they are glorified in society. And I find that's why recovery is so hard, because I'm almost at a point now where like my weight is stable, and so that's really great, but I still have some of the behaviors associated with an eating disorder. But where I am right now is pretty normal in society, you know, to be a little bit concerned about your weight, to be a little bit restrictive, but to have like a figure that is desired by society. And so to actually try and break free from that is like, you know, the mental complication that brings is really difficult. And I think that's where sort of that reactive hunger comes in and makes it even harder to keep eating, because it's like, well, you know, I'm at a point where I am at a weight that is fine. So why do I need to keep eating? Why do I need to keep fueling my body in that way? Because surely if I just keep eating more and more, I'm going to keep on gaining weight, and therefore I won't have this desirable figure anymore. I think that's where my head is currently at, in that, why do I need to keep eating more and more and more? Because, you know, medically on the scales, I'm okay.
Yeah, it's a very, very common thought people have. And this is the thing, right? Is what is the alternative? That's always when I have people tell me that, like, why? It's like, okay, but you can do that. But what is the alternative to not doing that? Because the alternative to not doing that would be spending the rest of your life fighting your hunger, fighting your weight. And the thing is that there's no such thing as you can just have like just have a little tiny bit of I'll have the body type that, you know, that the eating disorder wants to hold on to certain body type, but I'll be free with food, I'll be free with everything. Nah, it's not a buffet. Like, it's not a buffet. That's not really how it works. And I think also a very like probably one of the best reasons to doing it is also listen to people who have been there and have done it. So people who have gone through that, people who have been leaning into the reactive hunger, as scary as it is, people who have been like, okay, well, I might be at a quote unquote healthy BMI, but I know this is not my set point, right? People who have then been pushing it there. And the reviews are good. The reviews are not really good for quasi recovery. I'm telling you, our bottom barrel. But when you look at people who have gone through recovery, they always say, thank God I made those final steps. Mm-hmm. Thank God. And this was one thing, because for my thesis, which I did on reactive hunger, I was interviewing people who were going through reactive hunger in that moment, but also I was interviewing people who had come out the other side, and that was the number one thing. It was so significant that it was something that I identified as a theme, so something that kept happening. It was that I called it relief and resolution, because that was what it was. It was like closing the chapter on something. It was that sense of inner peace. And I also think that one, when you've had an eating disorder, you become so used to always, you know, suppressing your hunger, suppressing your weight, engaging in those behaviors that you don't fully realize how stuck you are until you get out the other side and you're like, whoa, okay, this is how it's supposed to be. This is how it's supposed to feel. Oh my goodness. I remember this for myself. I was like, God, I have so much brain space. Like, what do I do now? I have so much brain space. Yeah. So much time as well. And so it's just, that's just what I'm reminding people is that it's not worth it. It is not worth spending your life trapped like that because of just like, again, it's like, it's just not worth it. It's just not worth it. Because if it was so great to stay in quasi recovery, people wouldn't have been so desperate to get out of there. People would, then people would just be like, oh yeah, this is awesome. That's not what people are experiencing saying.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, the whole quasi recovery thing is really tough because I think it's kind of like I mentioned earlier in that, you know, you could stay in this place for the rest of your life and, you know, you're probably, you're not going to be living life to the fullest, but you're also not going to be at the depths of despair that you were before. And it's really interesting you bring this up actually, because this was exactly what I was talking about in therapy yesterday, in that like a year or so ago, I was in the deep dark depths of it. And I knew deep down that I couldn't stay there. Like I either needed to engage in recovery or that was kind of it for me. And at the time, you know, it felt very difficult to even consider starting recovery, but I didn't really feel at the time like I had any choice. Whereas now it's very much, there is a choice, you know, every meal, every mouthful, there is a choice. And I was speaking to my therapist about this yesterday, in that, you know, now that I'm at this point, like skipping a meal, for example, is not a choice. Like I can't do that. I need to have a meal. But if I go out for dinner, if I go out for brunch, let's say, I could have what a safe food for me is poached eggs on toast, let's say. So I could just have that. Or I could have waffles and ice cream, which is actually what I want. But that to me feels, you know, quite an unsafe food. And what I was saying to my therapist is that, you know, everyone around me, if I have the poached eggs on toast, they're not going to think, oh, Hannah's still struggling or what have you. I can get away with having poached eggs on toast, and that's a perfectly acceptable food, but it's still feeding into the eating disorder because it's a safe option. Whereas having the waffles and ice cream, you know, it's like, well, why do you need to have that when you can have a meal that is less calories and feels safer? Why do you need to have something that you actually want to have? And I think this, for me, feels like the hardest point of recovery. And I've been in and out of anorexia for 14 years, and I've never got past this point now. And this is the point, because it feels, it's, you're not doing this to survive anymore. You're doing this to live a happier, fuller life. But also, it feels like there's more consequence. Or maybe for me, it's just there's more of the unknown because I've not been there for so long.
Exactly. Yeah, I think this is what I often hear is the narratives around quasi recovery. And a lot of times, and again, this is not to, I don't never want to generalize in terms of healthcare professionals, but unfortunately, a lot of them will sometimes kind of settle for quasi because of what you said. Like it is, it's better to be alive. You may not be thriving, but you're alive. You're not where you used to be. And then you look back, and this is also what happens often if someone has been sick maybe for a long time, or they've been, you know, in a really bad place, they start thinking, oh yeah, but I'm not there, so I can't be quote unquote sick enough now, right? And then that holds them back from further action. So I actually would argue that quasi recovery, it's not safe. It may feel safe in the moment. I would argue it's very dangerous because, and you kind of, you said something, you said you've been in and out of kind of with the anorexia and you never gotten past that point. What I would say is quasi recovery, part of what makes it dangerous is not just that it is a really shitty place to be in, realistically speaking, it's exhausting, but also because it makes you really vulnerable. Again, in and out, like I said, back and forth. You're not going to be completely stable in your recovery. What we see is people who are, we see when we look at relapse risk and relapse reduction, we look at people who are actually pushing past the minimum healthy weight. They're pushing past, you know, just that like, okay, better, but not fully there. They're the ones who have the lowest risk of relapse. So getting out of quasi, it's something that could potentially save your life. And but it can be so difficult, especially when it has become normalized. And also, like you said as well, very good point, like society sometimes normalizes it because you're able to slide mm-hmm. under the radar. Nobody's going to react to someone, like I said, ordering, you know, ordering toast instead of the waffle. But again, it's that thing of, okay, but how do you feel, right? Not just, okay, are other people thinking, are they concerned? What are they thinking? How is it for you, right? And this is a big thing about recovery, is that what someone needs in recovery may be different from other people. Someone else, maybe it may not even be anything. They may go to the restaurant and order the toast, and that is not thought in their head about it. But if you know that you are making that order and you really want something else, and it's your eating disorder holding you back, that is not a safe even option, because it's something that keeps you stuck in quasi. And quasi is, in my humble opinion, not a safe place to be. It's actually very, very risky. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that you have just highlighted such a good point there, in that at the end of the day, when you're in quasi-recovery, I think the reason it's so hard is because you really have to look inside at your actions, and you have to be honest with yourself. And I don't know about others, but my experience has been that my eating disorder has become so entrenched that sometimes I don't even know if I'm making the decision that I want, or if I'm making it based on what the eating disorder wants. And I think that's when it becomes really difficult, because rather than just sort of like making a decision and going with it, you really have to unpick that decision. And I guess to start with, that could be really time consuming, and you're like, oh, but I don't want to have this every time that I'm choosing what I'm eating. But I think the more you're able to like look at the decisions that you're making and understand where they're coming from over time, that will bring you to a point where you are making decisions that are healthy decisions based on what you actually want rather than what your eating disorder wants. And I think that's what I found as well. Like, it's just become, you know, I think everybody with an eating disorder has specific behaviours that have contributed to their eating disorder. They might vary, but I think that a lot of the time they become almost instinctive behaviours. Mm. And for me, because I've been, you know, like I said, in and out of it for so long, some things are really obvious and I'm like, yeah, well, that's definitely the eating disorder. But other things, it's like, I'm not quite sure, actually. Yeah. Like, I don't know where this is coming from. And so with the whole sort of like poached eggs on toast or waffle thing, my therapist said to me yesterday, what I need you to do is actually to challenge that. And I said, but that would be so difficult, because it's that fear of the unknown, the discomfort afterwards. Like, for me, I've never really struggled with the concern of what's going to happen long term. For me, it's very much been in the moment. So for me, when I'm worried about what I'm going to eat, it's almost the way that it's going to make me feel afterwards. And often foods that I haven't eaten before will make me feel really like weird inside. So for me, the like worry is, after I've eaten that, I'm going to feel really disgusting, and you know, then that's going to take away the positive experience of having that nice food. But what my therapist said to me was, well, you don't actually know that, because it's been so long since you've eaten that food. So it's really hard, isn't it? But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, in recovery there will be so much fear around things that you haven't done for a while. And, you know, particularly with things like reactive hunger and things like that, you know, actually listening, you know, you might not have experienced a hunger cue for ages. And then all of a sudden you have this cue and you're like, what on earth am I supposed to do with this? Like, am I supposed to trust this? Am I supposed to go with it? Like, what do I do? But I think it's all about really being able to lean into listening to yourself and being able to trust yourself. And also knowing that, okay, so let's say you have the waffle, you don't really enjoy it, not based on how the eating sort of makes you feel, but just generally, you know, you don't really enjoy it. It's one meal. It doesn't matter. And I think that's another thing that a lot of people struggle with, is they want every meal, particularly if it's one that they're kind of not had for a while and it feels quite unsafe, to be perfect.
Yeah.
And one thing I've realized through this recovery is it does not freaking exist.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes I'll eat something and I'm like, oh my god, I put this on a pedestal and it was actually shit, but it's fine. It doesn't matter. Like, let's move on. It's more about the memories and the moment. Sometimes it's just functional eating. Like, I've got a meeting in 10 minutes. I just need to get something down me. Yeah. It doesn't always have to be perfect. Well, it doesn't have to be perfect ever.
Exactly. This is something I see over and over, this like food perfectionism where, and it's interesting because this will oftentimes apply for fewer foods, right? It's like, oh yeah, I can't challenge, for example, that waffle, right? But it's going to have to be very tasty. It's going to have to be the perfect circumstance. There's like all of these like rules around that thing, right? And I see this oftentimes, even if someone has a specific fear food, they're like, yeah, I can challenge it, but, and there's a lot of different things around it. And I actually tend to say, okay, well, actually, let's flip that in head. Like, maybe let's even make a goal that, yeah, you eat chocolate, for example, if that's a fear food, and you do it imperfectly. So eat it, like sometimes I told people, eat it like at like when you're waiting for the bus, like it's people around, it's noises, and it's like, but you have it there because it takes food off the pedestal. Because the thing is that scarcity creates an illusion of value. If you are really restricting yourself from chocolate, of course, it's going to be really exciting when you have it and it needs to be perfect. But instead, just allowing yourself to have it, then suddenly, also ironically, chocolate then becomes a little bit less interesting. Like, yeah, chocolate is awesome. I love chocolate. But I remember during my eating disorder, it was on this pedestal where it was like the most holy thing in the world. And that, of course, it was because I was restricting it. And it is, you also made a really good point about like knowing what's you and what's the eating disorder when making decisions, especially if someone's had an eating disorder for a while and it becomes so ingrained that it's like, I don't know where I begin and the eating disorder end. Like, I had no idea. One thing I tend to tell people is look for discomfort, look for anxiety. So if you're between two decisions and you don't know, is it me who wants it? Is it not? Look for anxiety. If there is anxiety or resistance to having that waffle, probably is eating disorder related. A person who doesn't have an eating disorder at all, they just don't like the waffle that much, they're not going to have anxiety by the prospect of eating it, right? So I think that's the thing. And a lot of times recovery is essentially about doing things that make you anxious until they don't make you anxious anymore and just repeating, which of course people kind of hate hearing because it's like, oh God, you're saying I'm going to have to be just uncomfortable. Yes, you are uncomfortable, but you are uncomfortable for a period of time so that you don't have to spend the rest of your life in perpetual discomfort. Because if you don't put in that work, it's not like you're just going to wake up one day and the waffle are suddenly going to be safe, even if you haven't challenged it, right? So that's where it's difficult. It's important to highlight that it is a temporary discomfort for future relief, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that I think is like the absolute golden nugget of this episode in that, you know, yes, recovery is difficult. It is, there's no denying that it is uncomfortable. It's difficult. Sometimes you'll think, why the hell am I doing this to myself? However, is it better to stay in this eating disorder hell? Or is it better to have this short period of discomfort that, yeah, feels really gross and you're inflicting it on yourself so it feels horrific, but to then in the future not be in the hell anymore? And to me, that's the thing that's kept me going every day is this right now feels uncomfortable, but I have the hope that in the future things will feel better. And that might not be true. You know, let's be real, that might not be true. Like you said, the reviews do suggest that it does get better. But it could not be true. However, one thing is for certain is that if you stay in the eating disorder, it's definitely going to be shit for the rest of time. So it's kind of like, you know, yes, recovery is the unknown, but equally it's got a higher chance of being better than what staying in the eating disorder has.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask you as well was you were just talking about chocolate. And that's also something I put on pedestal. And actually today, to driving back from the business meeting I went to, I was driving along and I ate a chocolate bar in the car, and I did appreciate it and I did taste it, but because I was driving, I didn't really acknowledge that I was having it. And afterwards I was beating myself up like, oh my God, all those calories, like you didn't appreciate them, you weren't thinking about it. But then I was like, it's fine, like it was a snack to keep me going, it doesn't matter, like, you know, I'm actually fine with that. But one thing that I found during my recovery is that when I was, you know, in the depth of anorexia, one, I didn't have much, I didn't feel much hunger. But two, I also didn't crave things such as chocolate or pastries or cake or ice cream, things now that like all the time I'm like, oh my God, I want that so badly.
And I wondered if when you were doing your master's thesis, you looked at that at all in terms of how your cravings change, because mine went very much from like, I would be craving things like lettuce. Mm. Whereas now I crave things that, you know, on quote unquote, more normal cravings that quote unquote, people with a normal relationship with food tend to experience.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have a theory that an eating disorder messes with your taste buds a bit, because when I look back to my own eating disorder, some of the disgusting things that I would eat and call a meal, I'm like, no. I don't know exactly why this happened. We don't exactly know. But what we do tend to see with people with eating disorders is that, yeah, they will tend to explain the same similar things. What I do often see, though, is they will have a lot of mental hunger around these things. So even though they may physically, they may be in the depths of eating disorder, they'll be making their salad and they think that salad is the best thing in the world, even though there's not like any dressing or anything that makes that salad good. Still, the same people will often look, for example, at recipes. They spend a little bit, bake cake for other people, for example. So you can see that it's almost like the messaging has gone a bit wrong, where they're getting all of these signals around food, around like, for example, oh, you need to, you know, focus on food, for example, baking for other people. But it's like a failure to interpret those messages as, no, you need this food. So it's very, very fascinating. And there have been quite a few theories about what is actually going on here. I have a theory that sometimes what's going on, again, this hasn't been completely proven yet, because again, like I said, we don't completely know. And unfortunately, eating disorders are one of the less researched mental health conditions, despite being very common. But I'm sometimes wondering if it could be that the body detects famine, and then it's, for example, this baking for other people and feeding other people. I often see also people explain that they feel very concerned that everyone else is restricting or that they're starving. Like, I remember myself, I would like accuse my poor younger brothers of secretly like starving themselves, and like, accuse them. They're like, what? It's almost like the body's detecting that there is a famine. And then it's like, well, if you can't feed yourself, at least focus on keeping the pack alive, right? So there seems to be something very deep rooted, and something, so we see a lot of the symptoms of anorexia seems to be related to be a response to famine that's been developed to survive starvation throughout human history. So for example, the ability to quote unquote survive on very little food. When I say survive, I just want to say, I don't mean survive because as in like thriving or doing well mentally or physically. People with anorexia, when they are in that acute state, they're not, they are, it's a very, very deadly illness, but more feeling like you can get through the day on a low intake, feeling like you can maybe do movement despite eating very, very little. A lot of it seems to be related, and this has been theorized by researchers such as Sean Gussinger, been theorized to be that it's a response to surviving in environments with very little food, to kind of keep going, push through, move, migrate to a place that has maybe more food resources. And then it is just, you get stuck in this perpetual starvation state, and you may not realize just how sick you are, because you may feel quote unquote fine. You may not feel like there's a problem. And then of course there is. And then that's the scary part about eating disorders, that it suddenly hits you, right? It's suddenly something goes really wrong. And this is equally also what happens with reactive hunger. We see this, that you were maybe going through, think about it, like many, many years ago, like going through, think about a tribe was going through a period of starvation. There would have been some people who responded by kind of conserving energy, and other people who responded by getting more energy to go out, hunt, food-focused behavior without stopping to eat themselves. And then if there is then a period of food availability, what would then have to happen? Well, you're going to have some reactive hunger to then feast, to get back into health, to restore weight, all of these things. So it makes a lot of sense when you think about it from that perspective. But a lot of times people will tend to instead think, no, actually, it's something wrong. No, 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 I'm becoming addicted. I'm having a problem. I need my eating disorder. My eating disorder gives me all of this control, all of those things. When, again, it goes back a bit to what we said, eating disorder is not that special. It's not that great.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting what you were saying there about the fact of, like, you know, if we think about it in like prehistoric times or whatever, where if there was a period of famine, then your body needs to keep going to find more food. And I definitely experienced that in terms of when I was really ill with my eating disorder. I wasn't eating a lot, but I had so much energy. Like, I'd go to the gym and I'd do these workouts that now I'm like, how the hell did I have the energy or the capacity to do that? But obviously, if you think about it, it's that, you know, that natural response to, well, we need to have that energy from somewhere to be able to go out and find food. And then what then happened for me was, once I then did start eating regularly, I was exhausted all of the time. Like, I had no energy, like I couldn't exercise, nothing. And I remember being like, what the fuck is happening? Like, so I don't understand, because when I was ill and wasn't eating, I had so much energy. Now I've got no energy and I'm ill all the time. It's really, really strange.
It's really strange. It makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because that eventually that's all of the damage that's been done on the body through just engaging in that compulsive movement, eventually it's going to hit you, right? So it makes sense that just as there is a period of reactive hunger, there's also a period of reactive tiredness, reactive fatigue almost. Mm-hmm. There is very little studies done on this. It is something, it's very anecdotal. Like, people will say it over and over. Like, hey, during my eating disorder, I had so much energy. And then I started recovery, started eating more, and I lost my energy. And of course, what does the eating disorder say? Ah, look at this. You're becoming lazy. Yeah. You're becoming unhealthy. Look at you. No, no, no. You need to get back into it. But actually, what is happening is that it is a response to famine. And fascinatingly, we also see this even in animal studies. We've seen studies done on rodents where they've taken rodents and like rats, mice. I think the study was on rats, but please forgive me if I'm wrong. And they they took rats and they restricted their food intake and they gave them a running wheel. And the ones with restricted food intake, they would run and run themselves to death, right? Which is pretty, it's very surprising. So this is a reaction we even see in animals. So that energy that you feel you may get during periods of starvation is not real energy. It's the same kind of stress response, whereas, like, now I'm sitting here right now, I'm feeling quite tired, quite relaxed. If there was a lion in this room, I would suddenly get a burst of energy. I would run so fast that I probably never would run that fast in my life before, right? That's energy of me just being very active. Mm-hmm. That is a stress response. And that's what's happening with the eating disorder energy, is that it is a stress response. Mm-hmm. Exact same with the appetite suppression. It's a stress response. And it's a very, there's a limit to how long you can live like that. Also, you can't really live a full life like that.
Well, like you said earlier, you know, when you do then start to recover, you're like, wow, I've got so much brain space and I've got so much more capacity for life. But now I also just, like, when I, you know, if my head does, if the eating sort of raises its ugly head, I'm like, I actually don't think I've got the energy, desire, I don't even know what the word would be, to go back to that now. Like, to think about the restriction and what I was putting my body through, like, I physically don't think I can put myself back into that position. But it is hard, like you say, navigating those thoughts that arise when you don't have the energy to maybe exercise, or you are feeling a lot more hungry than you used to feel, because your eating disorder will naturally latch on that to try and pull you back. And I was just wondering how, when your clients come to you with that, how you support them to navigate that, because ultimately it's a very difficult thing. And I was saying this yesterday to my therapist, in that my head is my biggest critic. Like, somebody, if somebody said to me, you know, outside on the street, oh, you know, you look fat or what have you, it would hurt. And, you know, I think maybe for a couple of days I'd be really upset by that if they called me lazy or things like that. But I would be able to, it wouldn't hurt me as much as when it's in my head. And I don't know whether that's because it's perpetual, it's constant, always putting myself down. But I find that those internal comments are much harder to navigate and not act on than the external comments. I was just wondering how you support your clients in navigating those difficult thoughts.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So one thing that I always tend to remind clients when they're going through recovery, especially if they're going through things like reactive hunger or reactive tiredness, and a lot of the thoughts and feelings that tend to come up there around, like, the eating disorder will get quite vicious. I tend to remind people that recovery is temporary, because a lot of times what happens is that people confuse being in recovery with being recovered. So they start recovery and they're experiencing, well, my head is screaming at me, telling me I'm lazy, telling me all of these things. Why would I live like that? And I'm telling you, yeah, but that's recovery. That is not being recovered. Mm. You're going through temporarily going through this discomfort to get out the other side. And because, yeah, if recovery meant just being perpetually in emotional distress for the rest of your life, if that's what it's like to be recovered, nobody would be recovered. That's a really bad deal. But instead, I remind people that it is temporary. And I find that when people get reminded that it's temporary, that can be really helpful. But I think that it's people often don't realize. And I think, yeah, there's a lot of like language around as well about like what recovery is, what being recovered is. And I really want to acknowledge that everyone has a different perception of what that means for them. That is completely okay. But I also sometimes wonder that the narrative that you are in, quote unquote, in recovery for the rest of your life is not necessarily something I think is too helpful, because it make it seem like, oh, you're going to have to struggle and fight this for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't want to like make it seem like I have like the monopoly of how an eating disorder is or how recovery is, but I find that that narrative can be quite unhelpful, whilst instead being told like, hey, yeah, you're going to have to go through, you're going to have to accept that it's going to be hard, but you're doing that so that it at one future point stops being hard. Very, very, quite nice to hear.
Yeah. I think the way that I try and frame it in my mind and what I've heard other people say is that like recovery or being recovered is possible, but it's going to look different for everybody. It's not necessarily going to be sunshine and rainbows eating cake for breakfast every day. Like some people that might be their recovery, for other people that won't be. But the way that I think I would like my own recovery to be, or, you know, when how I would call myself recovered, is that day to day food doesn't take up every thought in my life. And the way that my body appears doesn't take up every thought in my life. I have a good relationship with food. And then sometimes if I have a difficult day, if, you know, work's being difficult, a relationship's being difficult, whatever, I might think, maybe I could lean into food here. Maybe I could lean into my body. Maybe I could lean into exercise. But I'm really quickly able to acknowledge that's not good. What other coping mechanisms do I have in my toolbox that I can lean into? And I think it's the speed of how you respond to those thoughts and your actual response that's different when you're recovered than, you know, rather than, oh shit, it's been 6 months, I've been restricting, I've lost loads of weight, it turns out I'm back in an anorexia relapse, which is what happened to me a couple of years ago. It's, I've noticed that I've reduced this, that and the other. Yeah. Let's stop that. And how else can we support ourselves?
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a really good, really, really good point there. It's being able to catch, if you have some of those thoughts and feelings, being able to catch them without just automatically going for it, right? I also will say that there also are people who will say that for them being recovered, they actually stop having those thoughts and urges to begin with. Again, I understand everyone's different. For me personally, when I'm having a bad day, the thought of turning to restriction doesn't hit me. It's very strange. Like, it's not something I even think I should restrict. I should take it out of my body. It doesn't hit me at all. But I also want to acknowledge that there are people who are fully recovered where they may get tempted to do that, but they are choosing not to do it, right? They're able to really like withstand from engaging in those behaviors, right? So I want to really honor that people have different experiences, but I also want to say like, yay, hey, like you may not have to struggle for the rest of your life. You're probably always going to have a predisposition. Like I know that even though I'm fully recovered, like an eating disorder doesn't affect my life in any way, it's far in the back in the past, I still know that I'm probably not someone who can ever really start dieting again, because in my case, being in an energetic deficit for a prolonged period of time sets off certain things biopsychologically in me where my brain will reward me for a behavior that for most people is not very rewarding. That's essentially what's happening. Most people find being on a diet, that's not a rewarding, nice thing for them, right? For me, that I know there's a part of my brain, if I get far enough into the deficit, it'll become rewarding. Thankfully, now that I've been recovered for a while, I noticed that if I, for example, I go a little bit too long without eating, or I like something like that happens, I don't get triggered, I don't get rewarded, it will take some time before I would were to fall back into that. But that's why I tend to like seeing an eating disorder as not a chronic condition, because that's sometimes the narrative I hear is like, it's chronic, it's lifelong. It is more a vulnerability, right? It's just like an alcoholic probably shouldn't really drink again, right? It's probably that's not going to be, it's never going to be someone who can like go and hang out in a bar nonstop safely. But that's where I see it as a vulnerability and a predisposition rather than something you are forced for the rest of your life spending it at war. Or with food, with body, with movement.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing that you nicely highlighted there is that although we said earlier an eating disorder isn't unique and special, your experience of it is. And so your experience of recovery and being recovered and how you respond to that is different. So you can't compare yourself to somebody next to you and think, oh, well, their recovery looks completely different to mine, therefore one or the other is invalid. At the end of the day, I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier about like when you're going out for food, it's about being honest with yourself and saying, you know, how does this make me feel? What's coming up for me now? And, you know, does this feel like somewhere I'm happy to stay? Yeah.
Exactly. That is very important. Respecting everyone's journey is different, but also focusing on making that journey the best it can be for you, right? So for example, if you know like, hey, I have some areas where I should push in this area, not just settle. No, but recovery for me means quasi-recovery. And then be like, oh, I mean, everyone can do that. But it's not necessarily, you're not necessarily going to reach your full potential that way, really. So I always like pushing people like, hey, don't settle. Keep going.
You're too good to settle. You're too important.
Exactly.
It's been honestly so lovely to chat to you. I am like, I really appreciated this chat so much because like I said at the start, it's something that I'm going through at the moment and I feel, you know, empowered to go and have a snack now because I'm so freaking hungry again. It's so funny because like I've eaten what I normally eat and more and I'm sat here like, oh my god, I'm still hungry. But I'm gonna put it on record that I'm gonna embrace that and go and have something else to eat because that's what I need to do.
Yeah, your body is giving you those signals for a reason. It is what you
exactly
need. Body is not like, it's not like your body is literally like, hey, we need food. That is why you are experiencing this. It is that straightforward, really.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. Don't complicate it. Just listen to your body, trust your body, know that it's doing the best for you. And I think the thing is, like, what I try and say to myself, and I don't know whether people will find this helpful, is, but there's been this, like, arbitrary, whether you want to call it a voice or a thought in your head, that has no sort of reviews or no experience, no accolade or anything, and you've listened to it and you've put yourself in a very vulnerable position for it. So why don't you listen to your actual body that is saying to you, we're here to protect you? Because I think it, you know, if you can trust the eating disorder, why not, you know, it's put you in this shit, so why not switch up a bit?
Exactly. It reminds me of a quote from someone called Lindo Bacon who said, for years, I thought there was something wrong with me because I couldn't control my relentless drive to eat. Turns out I was just hungry. And it's like,
wow.
If someone is experiencing reactive hunger as a result of an eating disorder, then yeah, that is something that will be healed with food. That particular hyperphagia, got to eat.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's all go and get a snack.
Yeah, very good idea.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you.
Thank you so much. It's been so lovely. And I really, you know, respect you for being quite open and vulnerable as well with your own experience. I'm sure that can really, really help people as well, like hearing that there is, someone going through it, someone who's, you know, I think that could be nice.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Oh, well, have a lovely weekend and I will speak to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.